Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 12 and do some other stuff on this podcast that we've been talking about for ages. I'm very excited about it. But to join me, please welcome the Strath to my Biostrath, and that those are the two products we will literally be live taste testing on this podcast, the great Mike Bloom. Mike, are you excited like I am?
I am extremely excited. You know, nothing is hidden here. So we know Steffi's going to really enjoy this podcast in particular.
Yeah, Steffi is definitely listening, I think. I mean, look, Steffi's not subtle. We'll talk about Tribal Council, but the way in which she was just like, Jacques, play your idol, was hilarious to me. But yeah, we do have actual Survivor to talk about other than just, you know, live taste testing the sponsor products on the podcast. I mean, I hate to disappoint people, but Survivor did happen this week. And, you know, maybe one of the quieter episodes for Survivor South Africa this season, in that it was a unanimous vote and the person on the bottom, Dante, finally got voted out after basically weeks of teasing that. But I still think, you know, always so much fun stuff happening in South Africa.
Yeah, ironically enough, one of the quieter episodes, considering we got rid of one of the louder castaways this season. And I will say, I think this, in a season where, you know, we've talked a lot about the editing itself being a little straightforward in terms of us really being told the story as to why X lost, for lack of a better term, this one probably felt the most straightforward just because it seemed like an obvious choice. There were still a couple of question marks, like, you know, there was the split vote, but why did, you know, the people who were with Dante on the reward vote for Jacques, and why did Dante vote for Kubis instead? And of course, there's everything involving Darrow here. I tweeted this out, but I always wonder every week if Darrow is going to out-Darrow himself. And Shannon, this is the Darrowiest episode of Survivor SA yet, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I've said it before, but, you know, peak Darrow. I think every time I think we've reached peak Darrow, we just get up another level. I'm excited to see, therefore, where it can go. Darrow was absolutely amazing in this episode. And yeah, as you said, you know, for a unanimous vote, there was some weird, confusing dynamics, I feel like, happening here. Most of them, to me, had to do with Kubis and Jacques. Didn't understand why some people weren't working with them. I didn't understand why they weren't trying some other stuff. I didn't understand why they were some people's targets, but they were both definitely a focal point of this episode.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, Dante is, as Rob says, he is the common enemy. So we always had, to your point, him on everybody's radar and on the viewers' radar as well, basically the entirety of the post-merge, especially after Meryl left. Now that he's gone, I'll almost like, you know, copy what I said about the CPay boot last week and apply it here. I do feel like the game's opened up now, where now that that common enemy is gone, you do have some people like Maba, who's been a consistent target as well. But the question is, you know, who's Rob's empire going to gun for next? And it seems like from what they were trying to institute this week, they were at least trying to get Jacques to become the next person, though Jacques showing that super fan resolve. You know, showed a lot of conservative attitude compared to what he did in his very first idol play, and read the room, figured out that, you know, the votes were not coming his way, or at least a plurality of them were not. And now he's basically guaranteed to survive at least next episode as well. So I think that, you know, I agree it's a weird episode for him, and it's weird to see him targeted so quickly to get rid of Robin after Batman, as it were. But I think he had some good plays this episode.
Yeah, I feel like Jacques' idol play in the Ting Ting episode is like the Nathan of this podcast, and that it gets mentioned every single week by every guest that we have. Poor Jacques will literally never live it down. Like, if he wins and it becomes like the best winner ever and does this amazing thing, we'll still be talking about the Ting Ting Miss idol play. But I was impressed, like you were. It was such an obvious duality. Like, that time he panicked, he played it when he didn't need to. This time he would have had every reason to think he should. Obviously, he was a target. They could have put the votes on him, to be fair. But he read the room. He read people like Steffi, who literally, I feel like she was like, people just aren't trustworthy unless they play their idol. Like, play your idol or we will punch you in the face. Like, she was like, it was really not a subtle strategy, but he read that correctly and he didn't play his idol, which I found really impressive. It did show how far he's come from the paranoia to here. Basically, he said in his voting confessional on the Mnet website that, you know, he's going all in with this bet and he made the correct bet on the correct read. So that was really great from him. But just for his place in the larger dynamics, I mean, I want to talk about it from kind of everyone's perspective, but from a broad perspective, I was surprised that he wasn't the primary split vote target, and it was Dante. Like, obviously, they do want Dante out. He has the capacity to win immunities. They don't like that he's taking their rewards because, you know, they're people. They want to eat too. But Jacques, to me, is just so much more dangerous. And if you have, you know, several votes you can put on someone, he's the kind of person where even if you get him to play it, he's likely to find another one. He could win his own immunity, good at some of the challenges, good at puzzle challenges. He also has more strategic impetus than someone like Dante. So once he had the number there, I feel like the majority probably should have put the main votes on Jacques. If he doesn't play it, he's gone home with the idol. How great is that? And if he does, then, you know, at least he flushed the idol and Dante goes home anyway.
Yeah, it is very interesting how, you know, Rob essentially wanted to give him a stay of execution. And part of it probably was the fact that he had an idol. So they said he's guaranteed safe this round anyway. So let's see if we can sort of pull a Meryl and make him play it. They were not, unfortunately, 2 for 2 when it came to a duping an idol holder. But it's a good point where Jacques is a person where if you give him enough rope, you know, he's going to be able to tie himself a nice knot to hang on to.
Or at least tie his braids up real nice, because his hair still looking fly.
Hair's on point, still purple, on purple, and on point. I mean, yeah, the Dante thing, it's tough, because, I mean, we very much got verbalized both this week and basically the past month of Survivor South Africa why he got targeted here. Even though he hasn't won an immunity challenge, he's won every single reward challenge. I mean, he technically won an immunity challenge, but that was grouped into with the reward challenges. There definitely was a little bit of, I wouldn't call this survival aspects, but I think a part of the game that's not necessarily talked about, especially in like the hyper strategic modern US version of them just being like, we're starving. And Dante keeps going on these rewards and eating and going with these people that, you know, we're not going. He's taking, quote unquote, weak people. I would say not such a great week for all these poor loose change people besides Dante, who everyone else just sort of gathers around and is like, yeah, we're the great people in this game. We're the really, you know, good players. These people are not the great players. It's shades of saying that someone deserves to be in the game over someone else, which is, you know, one of my Survivor pet peeves. I feel horrible for Maba. Poor Maba, basically, since the Nathan Boot episode, has been painted every week with like, she's weak. She doesn't do anything in this game. When she's around, she's doing something right, guys. Don't write her off.
Yeah, and I mean, Dante really riled them all up by taking the loose change, like, slash weaker physically people on the reward, and then the stronger physical people were like, we put in so much effort and they put in as much effort as we do and they're on the reward. So definitely, I think taking out Dante, who might have kept taking the weaker players, made some of the stronger players, definitely someone like a Steffi, for example, think, well, that's not fair. Like, I want to be winning. I want to be going. I deserve it. And
Steffi has resting how dare you face. Like, it feels like everything is like, you made that choice. Why would you ever think you would have the audacity to do that without my permission?
Yeah, and so I definitely think it's true. Like, when you say it doesn't get talked about because we're hyper-strategic, I mean, I'm falling into that. I, as being, thinking about it from a hyper-strategic standpoint, I'm thinking, you should want Jacques to go. Jacques might outplay you. Jacques will find another idol. He could win immunity. There are so many options for Jacques, and Dante's option is that he may win immunity, and he'll probably win reward and not take you. So for me, I would rather get rid of the threat of Jacques, but I think for them, the real threat is that they do just want Dante to just go away and let them eat and let them win immunities and let them win challenges. And I think that's something I, analyzing it, don't care about as much, but you're right. Like, they really are just people out there wanting to go have a Samoan feast, and he's stopping them from doing that. And that's really annoying.
Yeah, though, to be fair, Dante, unfortunately, you know, if he had the option, he wouldn't have invited anybody. He would have gone by himself, which Dante may have showed his hand a bit in terms of his Survivor knowledge by saying that, because I tried to rack my brain as to like when we've ever had a solo Survivor reward where only one person wins it and they don't get the option to share it with anybody else. The only thing I thought of was in Survivor Exile Island, where they had that unorthodox final three reward challenge, and like Terry Dietz won like, I don't know, a granola bar and like a salad, and he ate that by himself. Like, that's the only thing I can think of where, okay, you're going to this feast by yourself and nobody's coming with you, Dante. You have the afternoon to yourself to just hang out, get away from the people that you don't like, and feast to your heart's content.
I would love to watch that 10-minute segment that is just Dante alone, clapping along to the dancing, crying at the emotion of it, and just being by himself. Like, that's good TV.
I love it. I love how this, it's so interesting how, you know, I think one of the best and worst things about Dante as a Survivor player and character is that in a fundamentally social game, he is so antisocial.
He hates people.
Yeah, to the point where he's like, you know what? In a game where I need numbers, screw it. I just want to go on this field trip by myself. So I'm sorry. I wish I could have gone alone here. But I guess I'll hang out with you guys and we'll try to figure out some sort of plan while we're, you know, stuffed to the brim with pig.
Yeah, I mean, in a social game, as you said, I wish to physically remove myself for a night away from everyone instead of, you know, endearing people to me by choosing them to go on. It's also something like you can think and not tell the group, Dante, even if it's true, like probably to, because I thought his choices for who he took were really good. You know, like we will talk about, I want to talk about the loose change players and what could have come together here, but I love Letitia as the first pick because Letitia is like the perennial swing vote. Like who the hell knows where Letitia is? I want to talk about that, but she was a good choice. I mean, the way he reconnected with Marba was fun from a strategic and story perspective to the point where she seemed the most loyal to him. That whole duality between Dante and Jeff and Marba continues to be a very favorite long-term storyline for me. And then Mike, you know, Mike is kind of the strategist who brought them all together. And, you know, he can always make things happen. He's well-connected, but he's not Saula. Like, he made some good choices, but then just to be like, I wish none of you were here. Like, I want you to know that I'm giving you this feast, but if I had it my way, I would actively choose for none of you to be here.
Yeah, and I guess while we're here, we'll come up with this plan. But for God's sake, don't you tell that dirty bastard Darrow. He's going in here like a cowboy throwing, what'd he say? Like he said, he was so pissed off at everybody after the CPAY vote because they cast a, quote, what'd he say, irrelevant votes, which is like, dude, you had a great pulse of the game in figuring out that Rob needs to go. But I think the CPAY vote is anything but irrelevant at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big deal. Like we talked a lot about last week about how that was a really, really big deal. I mean, you talk about how Dante is not a social player. The voting stats are at this point impressive. Like he went to 6 tribal councils. So he voted correctly at 1 because Jacques didn't play the idol correctly. So he voted Ting Ting out. Beyond that, not only did he vote incorrectly at every single one, at 2 of the tribal councils, he only voted with Meryl, if you're counting the fact that they didn't actually vote with him at the merge and were just leading him on. And the last 3 tribal councils in a row, back to back to back, he votes completely alone. Like, this is a level of being wrong at tribal that genuinely impresses me.
So let's talk about this, though, about the choice to get rid of him here outside of the humanistic capabilities that we were talking about beforehand, because I'm very intrigued. And I guess we'll see down the line if when it came to timing, if this was the right time to do it, because, I mean, like you said, Dante was really out there on an island. I think it was a self-appointed exile on that island. But I mean, he even threatened at the beginning of the episode to the other loose change players, like, hey, if you're going to go in here and play Cavalier and not do what I wanted to do, then I'm just going to work with Rob and those guys. And it did actually get my brain soaked a little bit of like, I mean, it's not a terrible idea for Rob and, you know, his alliance to, you know, maybe pick up Dante as just a free number to take out some of those other individuals. What I'm concerned about, because I think that this was yet another great plan executed by Rob, shows how many incredible connections that he's put in over the past 4 weeks, to the point where his name is still not being thrown out realistically by anybody left in the game, which is completely ridiculous to me, especially after the loss of CPAY. But he keeps saying this thing about like a common enemy unites us all. but when you get rid of that common enemy, what happens next?
Right.
And so I really do wonder if, I wouldn't even call Dante a meat shield. I guess he's more of a vote shield. When you get rid of him, I know we speculated for several times at this point, was getting rid of Rocco bringing down, a layer for Rob, was getting rid of CP bringing down a layer for Rob. I'll attribute the same question here. Do we feel like getting rid of Dante now opens other players up to consider other options and not be so laser focused on him that now they might look to somebody like Rob to get rid of?
I thought at the beginning of the episode, I was like, maybe he should keep Dante because he's such an obvious shield. But then throughout the episode, he gave himself another shield. Jacques is now an irritant and a shield. He's there for the next couple of votes. Yeah. He didn't even play his idol. So how much is that going to annoy everyone else? So I think that there are options. Like, if you keep making other people shields, then, you have some room to play. And I was so impressed with Rob that his name didn't even come up. Not even Dante was voting for him, And like, even his enemies, I guess, or the people against him, the Loose Change Alliance, were voting for the people he wants out. Like, they also were voting for Jacques and Kubus, who are his next targets anyway. None of Saul's name came up. He's so well insulated that I feel like he actually is good to go. And I was just so impressed with what he did in this episode, because I think we said last week, bit of a dicey situation for him. He needs to steady the ship, which he absolutely did. I said he needs to rally people, a lot of numbers behind a Jacques and Dante split vote, which he did, the common enemy, focusing on the rewards. And like, he did it all in this episode.
Yeah, I completely agree. And he just continues to astound me every week where he is taking big risks here. But I think he has the relationship capital to back it up, where he really is not rocking the boat in any perspective. What do you think is the most important connection that Rob has made that's really, allowed him all this success in the game so far? I have a thought, but I'd be intrigued to see if we have the same person in mind.
That's so hard. I mean, there are so many connections. I hear so many. I mean, I feel like you won't say this, but I feel like those are all the women. I mean, I feel like they'll never turn on him. They're really good to sit next to. They make like a solid block, but they're also threats in their own way. So I know that, Dural's great. Mike is great. He also has Kubus on the side. We even see him here planting the idea of Jacques in Kubus's mind. So many connections. But for me, his core is always Saula.
Yeah, see, I would personally say, Mike, I totally see your point, where I think especially someone like Nicole could have been a very big wild card coming into the merge, having voted out Nathan, but he was able to get her basically back into his inner circle. What makes me say Mike is because I think this episode was evidence of the fact that Mike himself had that social capital to create something that you had been jonesing about for the past several weeks, that Ta'alo plus Lao Mei
never happened,
OG
huh?
Alliance. Never happened. But it could have if Mike was not so tight in with Rob. You know, if he didn't feel like he had that connection with the Saul of Alliance, Mike could very easily have been like, yeah, you know what? Let's make this thing happen, especially due to the fact that, he's now relishing this week over the idea of voting blocks. I think maybe in a perfect world, that alliance of him and Maba and Jeff would just swing back and forth and take out all these power contingencies in the post-merge. So I think that Rob making that connection with Mike pre-merge, quite honestly, might have been the most important connection he's made in the game so far, because I think if he doesn't get in tight with him, then he stands a very good chance of actually being on someone's radar, because Mike could very easily mobilize the troops against him, as we saw briefly at the reward this week.
I see that, but I also feel like if I had to put money on anyone to be his downfall, I would put it on Mike. But I will go down with the ship of saying that Rob's dynasty in this game is built on the Rocco vote. I still think it was a bad move for the OG Ta'alo Lao Mei plan that a lot of people really should have gone with. And the reason Rob has so much power is because that was the best shot at Rob. Like, literally pre-merge, they should have, as I've said, it worked for Mike on other levels. I feel like he's my winner pick. I feel like he has other ways to the end. But the reason it's Rob's world and everyone's just living in it is because even with Nathan being gone, he's managed to have all the power, and it really all comes from that vote, which is like really the only time his name, obviously Dante's been going against him, and it was only Rocco, and it was a unanimous vote. Okay, not a lot of people have voted for Rob, but that what seemed like a plan that could have happened against him. And I don't know if there's been a lot of really good plans that could have happened against him since, and it didn't happen. So he's just got it completely on lock in this episode and, throughout the game. And just looking at the Loose Change players, they weren't coming for Saula, which I thought was weird. And the other thing that surprised me is that Dante was still trying to work with two of Rob's key allies, maybe secretive in terms of Dural, but Dural and Mike, and not Kubus and Jacques. Like, I don't get it, because they're Ta'oldlo. Jacques has worked with Dante. Kubus and Dante have been aligned in the past, and they were targeting Kubus and Jacques rather than trying to work with them when they were just left out of the vote. And for me, they were like the perfect people to recruit, surely, to go against the people who just left them out of a vote.
It's interesting, because when we sort of, had the reward players talking about who they would want to target, it seems like they said those two were the most dangerous players left in the game, which is very interesting to me. I was very surprised that Kubus in particular had his name called out, because I think that he had vocalized a lot of great stuff. You know, we gave him some chizzy points and commended him in the past several weeks about how he really, I think Nicole said last week, that he's in that gray area, you know, where he's not really committed. He's part of the Spitshaker 7, which I guess is back together again after CPay got eliminated. But, you know, he's not someone who necessarily is like OG Saula strong, you know, so he definitely is someone that has a little bit more wiggle room to him. So I agree, it's an interesting point to say, let's take him out instead of let's work with him. Maybe they feel like, you know, if they get rid of him, that allows one of them a spot to wiggle in there, sort of like why Kubus wanted to get rid of CPay last week. But they could have very easily gone to him and voted, you know, another way, just because, like you said, Dante and Kubus had that connection all the way back in the day. Dante and Jacques definitely were not on the same page after the Ting Ting vote, but it seemed like they were getting along in the post-merge in particular. I guess they were saying maybe Dante had sort of given up on targeting Rob because he felt like his pleas fell on deaf ears last week. I'm not entirely sure, but it was very intriguing to hear the loose change players really acknowledge the fact that those people are on their radar, just because they would be about the last people I would expect to have their names come out when you have such big blaring targets like Rob, or even a physical target like Steffi there.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we sometimes get comparisons, Rob, to say like Kim Spradlin, and that reminds me of Kim. Like, because with Kim, people would say, let's get rid of, you know, this person because they're such a physical threat, or they're such a social threat and such a strategic threat. And like, they were always maybe the second one of those threats to Kim, who was like the trifecta and the number one in all areas, which is really what Rob is. And when they're saying things like Jacques and Kubus are now the biggest threats, you know, this is why Rob doesn't need to think about keeping Dante around as a shield. Like, they're not seeing him as the one who needs a shield. He's not the one who's out in front. His name didn't come up in this episode. So it's just so impressive a game for me from Rob's perspective. But the fan fiction that I have in my mind is like, if Mike and Dural weren't part of this, and instead, you know, like, I'm seeing everything and I still like Dante's picks and I understood the logic behind his reward picks, but if he just went to Kubus and Jacques, who just left out of the vote, like, there were numbers there. I mean, Dural couldn't vote in the end, and we, you know, not everyone knows everything, but there's actually something that could have happened, because obviously you have Dante, you have Marba. If you have Kubus and Jacques, and then who knows where Letitia is, that was now 5 against 4, and you could have taken out a big threat like a Rob or one of his people. So I just think that it was like the half measures, trying to work with people who are allies with Rob, which didn't actually allow Dante to go with a Rob plan. They have to go for people like Kubus and Jacques, who are not really that much of a threat right now to anybody. I think they're people who could win at the end. I think they're good strategists, but they also have no numbers. Jacques has an idol. They basically have each other. It's not a huge blow, I think, to take them out for someone, but for someone like a Dante, it'll buy him a couple of weeks. I totally see why he would need to do that. But if you wanted to actually take out a big threat, I think there could have been numbers there. I don't really know where Letitia is. I want to talk about Letitia, but there possibly could have been a 5 of 9 without Dural voting.
Yeah, though, I mean, I think that would have been more of a tenuous vote. I don't know how much that would stick through the rest of the game, but I totally agree. If you're Dante and you're just scrapping to survive to another challenge that you'll try to go on alone, I think that, you know, you go for any port in the storm. And I think that's unfortunately another downside of Dante's game, which was spoken about several times last episode in particular, is like, once he gets an idea in his head, it's his way or the highway. As a result, he has been ambling down this dirt road for the past 3 weeks of the game, while everyone else has been driving down the highway, passing him up.
Yeah, but I was actually impressed in this episode that he didn't just, you know, vote for Rob by himself, and actually was trying to become part of a plan that no one else stuck with, but at least it was part of a more cohesive plan. Like, look, I'm not it's a low bar because I have in my notes here, like, look, 5 out of 10 is at least better math, you know, without knowing Daryl lost a vote, or, you know, it would have been 4 out of 10, unfortunately, because of that. But even with a split vote, it might have worked out. So the math was improving. I, as I've said a few times, I like the reward picks. I felt like there was more cohesion. At the beginning, he did yell at people, but then maybe the yelling was a little bit less. So I felt some improvement throughout the episode, but it's on a low bar, I guess, if I'm saying, like, good job, you added up correctly this week, you know?
Right. Well, that's sort of like what I attributed to Nicole last week, though, right? Like, Nicole, you made these horrible mistakes in getting rid of Nathan, but you know what? You're in a pretty good position now. It's like you dig a giant hole for yourself. And if you're able to climb out of that hole, it does deserve some commendations. And you know what? It is interesting how, again, going back to the Quibus and Jacques thing, it seems like from these jury videos and the new Ponderosa videos that have been coming out this week that Dante is rooting for Jacques.
Yeah,
which,
but why
again,
wasn't he working with him? I don't understand.
The question, like, if you like Jacques, why were you not? And maybe he did go to him and Jacques said no. We don't entirely know. Maybe they got edited out of the show. But it's really interesting to gauge the jury. You know, we talked about this a lot last season where we were saying Werner's playing this really awesome game. Why is the jury not reacting well to it? You know, we hear this stuff about Jacques. Seems like there was a Rob statement at Tribal Council that really piqued everybody's eyebrows as well. So now that we're approaching the halfway point with the jury, I'll be very intrigued to see, you know, what the jury's temperature on everything in the game is and how that's going to influence what the final vote is.
Yeah, Marba did say in her voting confessional something about having wanted to work with Dante and Jacques, who really weren't working together. So I didn't really know what was going on there. I feel like that's a group that needed to come together. I mean, for Kubus and Jacques, we didn't see them really doing much else. And were they doing other things? Because from what we saw, they just kind of went with Rob's plan, which is unfortunate when you've just been left out of the vote. And I think Rob could have done it.
They were lying in the sand. They were carefree, fancy free.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Rob could have done a little better, I think, in kind of placating them after that vote when he was like, look, we just didn't have the time. And they're like, well, we were here the entire day. Like, they both really didn't seem to buy that. And yet both...
And also, Nicole knew, and she was on iOS.
Yeah, exactly.
Quibus,
so. You had time to tell Nicole and not me. And Jacques got back before them. Jacques got back, you know, with all the other people on the reward, including Mike, who was in on the vote. So the timing doesn't work. But, you know, you can't argue with Rob's results. That's the kind of thing that, like, maybe they're like, that's a terrible way to placate us. You know, we are going to vote for you. But they don't. They vote with him. So the results are there. But I do also think that it really does show, like, it's kind of like a relationship. Like, once that trust is broken, I don't know if it can be taken back. And it shows that they really shouldn't be going with this bigger group when they've been left out of a vote. And now they're the immediate targets. Like, if they're leaving you out, there really is a good reason. You should not trust those people. I don't know what other options they pursued. I really think they should have been pursuing other options if they were there. And, you know, maybe it does hinge on Letitia, but, you know, Marba and Dante were there for the taking. I don't know why there wasn't more of a plan towards that, because now they're in a really bad spot. And I also don't understand why Kubus was left out of the vote. Like, he doesn't understand. He's like, I'm happy CPay is gone, because I literally asked for that, but I wasn't included on it. And we heard in this episode that Kubus and Jacques are really tight, which is amazing. I mean, we haven't really seen that reconciliation, considering, you know, back to the Ting Ting vote, you know, Jacques took Kubus's idol. We haven't seen a huge connection since then, and he's the one they're saying we can't tell him about the Jacques vote. So did they not tell him, thinking that maybe he would tell Jacques, who would play the idol? But he also told Nicole he wanted CPay to go. So it's okay from Rob's side, because they have enough numbers to definitely not care where Jacques is, and to maybe not care where Kubus is. But it is a little irresponsible just to leave people out of the vote, because then they become antsy, and who knows what they'll do.
And then on top of that, when you go to Tribal Council and you have one of your allies saying, like, not only saying play your idol, but almost like berating someone for being like, why did you not keep that in? Why did you keep that information from us, even though we just kept this information from you the previous round? Like, yeah. I think it
how
really
could you keep anything from us? And he's like, he's literally, his first line of the episode was, my number one ally was gunned down next to me. Like, talk about betrayal.
There's always some fun cathartic moments when people get called out on their hypocrisy at Tribal Council. I feel like I'm dumping on Steffi this episode, but she kind of ticked me off with her attitude, especially at Tribal Council. It reminds me a lot of in Survivor Guatemala, when there was a big pylon on Gary Hogaboom Hawkins, and Judd was digging in on him, and Gary's like, he's like, oh yeah, Gary's, you know, saying too many lies, men don't know how to trust him. And Gary goes, oh yeah, here's a lie. The idol is definitely on the ground. Mm. You know, it's always one of those fun take that moments where I don't know exactly how well it's going to do for Jacques' social game, even though he's already at the bottom anyway. But I was happy that he accurately pointed out that as much as they're yelling at Jacques for a breach of trust and not telling them about his idol, they committed, in my opinion, an even bigger breach of trust by not telling him that his closest ally and a key member of their alliance was going to get blindsided.
Is there a bigger way to scream at someone not to play their idol by basically screaming at them that you'll never trust them if they don't play their idol? Like, it was just so eye-rollingly obvious to me that, like, they were just trying so hard to get him to play his idol. And he had to face a lot, because even Mike came in a more subtle sense earlier in the episode, was like, I just have a hunch you should play your idol. He basically got it from everyone, which I guess is a really good way to know that you shouldn't be playing your idol. But yeah, Mike in this episode was in a really interesting spot. I feel like he's been trying to, you know, have his cake and eat it too, which for, you know, a large part he kind of has. He's still good in with Rob's, you know, plans. He's always included on different plans. He's kept Marba in the game so far, or she's at least still in the game. And for me, you know, as I've said, he's my new winner pick, and that's what I see. And there are two pathways, right? He's either going to entirely turn on Rob's group at a point, which I think is what people are kind of yelling for, and maybe that's what this would have been here if the numbers were there. You know, and also maybe at 7, like, if they do take out Jacques and Corbus, we're left with 4 Lao Mei, 3 Saula, maybe there's something there at 7. Or he's going to keep working with the Rob group the entire time, kind of like Tom did. You know, Tom never turned on the Alliance, but just hoped that at a point, as we've said, like they did with Verna, everyone at a point, including Nicole and Steffi, is just like, you gotta go. You know, there are pure rounds in Survivor South Africa, so maybe that's his path to the end. For me, he only has two objectives to win the game. One, get to the end, the jury seem to love him, and B, not be sitting next to Rob. Well, maybe he could beat Rob. I mean, the juries do really seem to enjoy him, but I wouldn't be sitting next to Rob. That would be his big move, his one, like, you know, a really big, obvious strategic move. He's also got really good social bonds. So the path is there, and everyone's like screaming at him to do it now. I mean, we're only going into the final 9. It was a huge merge. Mm-hmm. We don't know if it's a final 2 or a final 3. Making this move now and taking out basically his only protection, a main ally, would be giving a lot of time for it to bounce back on him. I don't really have a problem with him either, as I've said, waiting a little bit later and then doing an insurgency plan against the group, or literally going with the group the whole way and just having to take one shot at Rob. Sit at the end next to Rob's other allies, who are Steffi, Nicole, and Doral. That sounds like a great spot.
I mean, we saw that last season, right, where people were saying, like, why isn't anyone making a move against Werner? And then the, you know, the third to last round is when they finally take a shot at Werner. It doesn't necessarily need to happen at the final 9, but you also run out of runway to, you know, get people that you know are on your side to vote with you. And I am wondering if the storm clouds are brewing, Shannon, for Mike's big move next week, where I think that, you know, there's a chance that Jacques's going to be targeted. But if Maba's name comes up again, and maybe that, you know, sparks something in Mike's mind of like, okay, this is someone who will definitely work with me, I need to use her before she gets voted out. I think that, you know, Mike really had his hands in a lot of the plans this week. He's the one who pitched the split vote this week between Jacques and Dante, which could have bore out really well if, again, those loose change players had come together. If he does the same thing next week and then is able to get a plurality of the votes, maybe including Jacques, to turn on somebody, that could be something he could pull off as well. Though I do agree that maybe it's not necessary. I don't know. At this point, maybe I'm just stuck on that one comment that Rob made at Tribal Council that the jury really was confused by / angered with. He might stand a better and better chance even sitting next to Rob at that final Tribal Council, especially if Rob has to betray his All Saula final 3 or final 2 to get there.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to sit next to Rob. I mean, it's not just sitting next to Rob. Like, that's what Mike could kind of take to the jury as a big move. Like, he's done other strategic things. He could talk about, like, coming from Lao Mei and kind of surviving when someone like Jeff didn't. He could talk about that. And he's super likable, but surely you need the scalp rather than just sitting with Rob. I feel like Rob will make the argument that he took Mike along, and that would be probably a really fair argument. I mean, Mike is strategically being taken along, but no doubt Rob is, you know, giving him the coattails.
Right, but it also depends on how he phrases things. So maybe, again, I'm just fixating on this one comment, but I think it speaks volumes that, you know, Nico asks Rob essentially, like, hey, what are you thinking about with the end game? And Rob really gives this non-answer of like, well, it's too soon to decide, and that's why CPay left. And it cuts to the jury, which, by the way, CPay, if you ever had any inkling of doubt that she would not be killing the jury wardrobe game. That flew out the window with her amazing black leather ensemble with matching bag. But they
isn't it incredible that she wore that in the episode that they referred to her as Batman? Like, yes. So on point.
Which I'm also confused by. I know that Rob, now Rocco's Superman, C-Pay was Batman. We thought that Rob was Batman.
DC is sponsoring the season, right? Are they like the hidden sponsor? Like, why is everyone a DC superhero?
Yeah, this show is sponsored by DC Universe, much like many podcasts here. Yes. Rob has a podcast.
It makes so much sense.
But I guess Rob is not putting himself in the Justice League. So does that make him Lex Luthor? Is he part of the Legion of Doom? Is he just the narrator for the Super Friends? I'm not entirely sure. Maybe Rob can clarify that. But yeah, I mean, again, maybe I'm fixating too much on one jury reaction, but it rang a bell in my head that, you know, we have seen people time and time again on Survivor make it to the end with a dominant game, but then completely mess it up by not being able to, you know, properly address their game or try to play off certain elements in a way that comes across as, you know, overly devout or hokey to the jurors. And I hope if Rob does make it to the end, he doesn't do that. I hope he addresses things directly, doesn't necessarily go the more moralistic route, because I can imagine that might not play well with the jurors. And I think that's why a good amount of them are rooting for Jacques at this point. You know, he has that story of the scrappy underdog. And I wonder if Rob is sitting next to somebody like that, if he stands a much harder chance than maybe we initially thought even a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, now Jacques is the underdog that the jury likes. Mike is something of an underdog in that he's kind of just like fighting his way to, like, you know, rise up in the ranks. So the jury seems to like that. I still tend to think, I mean, I thought Verna, did I think Verna was going to win in the jury last year, or was I super paranoid about that?
I think we were super paranoid because, I mean, this is a much less raucous jury than last time. If we remember the Peanut Gallery, you know, at Tribal Council, and then the Ponderosa videos where, you know, they were just basically one big Werner bash session. We haven't gone to that point. Maybe it's a Nicole bashing session instead. But that's why I'm sort of like very trepidatious about this. I would say we've been screwed before, even though we didn't actually have Werner at the end. But I'm always very intrigued when it comes to the end game. I mean, we even saw someone like Sharn, you know, really fall on her sword with this whole honor and loyalty stuff that really cost her the game. I'm hopeful that Rob sees the game for what it is and is able to, if he does make it to the end, acknowledge just the complete dominance and, you know, supreme strategy he's had going on up to this point, because it really is impressive in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about Rob is that he has like four primary allies and three of them are a dream to sit next to. I mean, Drow, we'll talk about Pete Drow, Nicole and Steffi. I wouldn't be going to the end with Mike if I were him, and Mike's someone he could probably be beating in a challenge. Mike might be in that kind of like Rob God spot, you know, if it's a fight, you know, at the final four or final three, if it's a final two. So yeah, I wouldn't go to the end with Mike. I think he could have the edge, but I wouldn't be risking it. I definitely think, you know, talk about moralistic, Nicole's going to be way worse. Steffi's going to be way worse. I mean, they will out-moral him any day of the week. And Darrell, oh my God, I want to see Darrell at a final tribal council so badly, but I do think that Rob would win in that case. And can we talk about Peak Darrell here?
Yes, I think that, you know, we're at like minute 40 of this podcast, and that's like 50 minutes too late to talk about everything to wrap this
up. Well, we did talk about him a little bit before the podcast when we were just chatting, so there you go.
I love this man so much, and I'll admit it was a little bit of a ridiculous declaration I made in episode 5 about how much I loved him with losing the idol and getting food all over his face, but he has just delivered.
What a good call by you, like, honestly.
He has delivered in so many ways. I love this episode in so many ways with, you know, Darrow's involvement. I mean, Shannon, there was a very realistic possibility here where he was given the full answer key to the entire immunity challenge. There was a very good chance that he was going to still screw up the challenge because it's Darrow, and that made me so happy.
Yeah, and there was another part of me for 5 seconds that was kind of scared that this insurgency plan was going to happen until Darrell lost his vote, which wasn't, I think, what was going to happen. But it's funny that that was a possibility. Look, as someone who analyzes Survivor as my job, Darrell is so difficult because there's no answer. You know, I have here that, like, look, he's impossible to analyze because he can do anything because he's Darrell. Like, his vote wasn't important, but also he didn't need immunity. He's just like operating in the vacuum of being Darrell. Like, he can win the immunity. No one finds it threatening. everyone knew that he had an advantage, which was so funny. And then also, like, he can admit he has no vote, and no one is angry at that. Just, like, the way that he kind of admitted it to Rob, who also in the past has had no vote, and Rob was like, it's okay. Like, I can't analyze Doral. There's no right move, and there's no wrong move. He is just Doral.
I love it. I love it so much. But yeah, I laughed out loud with not only it was all the reactions to Doral's like random supremacy in the challenge, but specifically after he walks away, cut to Jacques. So he obviously had an advantage. Like, this is like funny. If we did a funny 115 for International Survivor, that would make like the top 10, in my opinion. The editors did such a great job on this, just having everyone's reactions of like, how is Doral doing this? Like, where the hell did this come from? And then Doral trying to like explain himself by like, you know, Nico goes to him and I think he said like, oh, and the outcome is I won. Like, it's just the Doraliest answer of him trying to play off the fact that like, yes, me, Doral, the man who can't keep food off his face, won this very complicated memory challenge and nothing happened on Island of Secrets. You don't need to ask about it.
Yeah, I like, look, he's a man who couldn't remember that he was lactose intolerant. Like, he's not going to be winning a memory challenge. He couldn't remember that you need light to view a piece of parchment in the dark.
Wow, just light a fire, dude.
Oh, poor guy. Like, look, honestly, the cheat code looked a bit hard. Like, I kudos to him for winning the challenge, but oh, it was just so funny that like, not only was it like that he won the challenge, but it was like the mental challenge like for Doral. And yeah, I mean, you can't fault the move. There's no wrong move when you're Doral, but there's also no right move. It's a very delicate place to be.
It's so interesting because Doral goes to Rob and, you know, says, hey, I had this cheat code. And by the way, I lost my vote, which I know he was like describing what the no vote parchment is to Rob. And Rob just sitting there smiling like, yep, reminds me of what I had to do several weeks back. But with Doral revealing this information, correct me if I'm wrong here, Shannon, is Jacques' reward steal the only time someone went to Island of Secrets and did not reveal what happened on Island of Secrets to anybody else in the game?
I'm trying to think about all the lies we've heard. There's been a lot of phoning home. Like, people have really come back and said way too much. But like, look, what is Doral meant to do here? He does have a no vote parchment. By the way, best moment of the episode wasn't even in the episode. It was on the Mnet website when they're casting the votes. And Doral was just like pretend writing over his no vote parchment, which is like about to be read in 30 seconds. That was so good. I mean, I don't think he's
whistling to himself while he's saying like zippity doo doo row.
People had their head in their hands. It was amazing.
Yeah. I love everyone's reactions to Doral because it really is this double-edged sword where like nobody takes him seriously and that endears him so well to everybody where to your point in a game where people are becoming increasingly, you know, infuriated at some others for being like, they're winning all these challenges. We need to get rid of them. Doral just won an immunity and everyone's like, oh, Doral. But at the same time, it's becoming more and more unlikely that I think if he sits at the end that he's going to get a new vote, considering that nobody takes him seriously in this game. And I don't know if that's going to translate to giving him a million rand as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think who we could sit next to. Letitia, maybe. Steffi and Nicole, I think, will annoy some jurors. But even then, I think probably you'd vote for at least Nicole over Doral. Like, look, I don't think they should be giving them a no vote parchment. That's something that's different to America where you just don't vote. And I think that's better. Like, make people like Dante, who's no longer in the game, but make people count on their fingers to see if like the votes were all there rather than just showing it, because then you have to tell the secret. Not that these people kind of need a reason to tell their secrets, but I think that should be, you know, be able to be a little bit more subtle than just having the no vote. But Doral in this episode, he just gets better and better every week. Like, he's someone who didn't get confessionals for the first few times and has just grown as a character and is the breakout character of the season.
Oh my God. And him coming back to camp and being like, everyone says, congratulations, right? He goes, well, anybody could have won that challenge.
Truly, 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 if you did.
But it's so interesting to see him go again. Like you said, he is by far the biggest wild card, maybe arguably one of the biggest wild cards I've seen since like Luke Tokey in Survivor, where I have no idea
like
where his head is
ago,
at.
I mean,
yeah, where his head is at any portion of time, where he's like, he was so anti-CP this week, last week, to the point where he told Dante, like, hey, you know what? Like, I would have voted out Acipe, even if the plan wasn't against her, because I, you know, I just want to show her that, you know, I see her. This week, he is so in against Jacques. He's like, oh, yeah, don't worry. I'm going to get Jacques on my side to play his idol. I guess he's just, I mean, he, like you said, the Misfits was a fairy tale, and he's ready to give it an unhappy ending, as it were.
Yeah, we did get questions about this, like, why is Dorel so anti-Jacques? And I really do think, like, we missed this whole portion of the vote last week where it seemed to be a Mabba-Dorel split vote, you know? And if Jacques was voting for Mabba, ostensibly he was agreeing, as far as we know, or was aware that Dorel was, you know, the second target to that. So I guess maybe Dorel feels as betrayed by, you know, Cipe as Jacques. And I love this. Like, is Dorel going to be a bitter juror? Like, if he gets to be on the jury, is he going to be, like, standing up there giving a rat and snake speech? Because it would be ridiculous and also amazing if that were true.
Okay, let's rank this in terms of who is most likely to have the most bitter speech. Dante, Steffi, Dorel. What's your ranking?
Steffi is first. Dante doesn't seem like he's going to be that bitter a juror. He actually seemed like he was going to be pretty fair. I mean, I wouldn't have thought Dorel, but he'd probably try to be bitter, but would just be so adorable that it wouldn't come across. Like, definitely Steffi. A lot of those are older members. Nicole could be super bitter, I think. So if they aren't sitting at the end, I see that's where the bitterness is going to come from.
Yeah, I mean, Steffi would be like, you know, how dare you get rid of me? Dante, I don't know if Dante would be bitter, but what would happen is somebody would start talking and then Dante would immediately interrupt to counter them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that falls in the bitter category, but I would say maybe most argumentative juror might go to Dante. And I would just say biggest question mark goes to Dorel. I think if we're doing some jury Jeopardy in the penultimate episode, I think Dorel is going to be the perennial mystery as to where the hell he's voting. He might vote for Nico to win, for all we know.
This is why I want them to go back to, like, actual speeches rather than, like, the conversation. I want Dorel to stand up there and say his piece. I just want to know what the speech is from Dorel. And look, you called him the biggest wild card in the game. And I want to talk about someone who I think is the actual biggest wild card in the game. And that is Letitia, who is on the show. Her vote is important. Like, she really is a swing vote.
I'm glad you had to point out that she was on the show.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, we don't talk that much about her because she's not a power player in the game. But her vote's actually really crucial. Like, we're talking here, or maybe they could have got fired together. Well, that includes Letitia. And next week, if Mike does want to go against Rob, well, he probably needs, like, Mabba, Kuba, Jacques, and Letitia. Like, she's the one where she could kind of go anywhere. And I think we're really seeing from her why it's so dangerous to leave this type of player in the game through the merge. Because it's like, she, you know, everyone's making moves based on what's in their best interest. But her interests to me are so, like, homogenous that I personally can't get a read on what she would do. And I don't know how the players could. Because, like, basically, if she flips, she'll probably make it far. She's not being targeted, but I don't think she'll win. And if she doesn't flip, she's not being targeted. She'll go far, but she's not going to win. Like, when your results and basically your, you know, ETA in the game are so consistent across whatever you do, how can you read that person to know what they would want to do in the game? Because it's like, she's going to land up roughly in the same spot. And we've been saying that since even before the merge.
She has wound up in so many important conversations.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. And I don't know if it's to her credit or to the detriment of the other players or both. But it's here again in this episode where, you know, they do this sort of loose change meeting at the reward. And, you know, Mabba and Mike and Dante are really talking it up. And Letitia's just sort of standing there observing. It's very interesting to me how I think everyone just sort of assumes that they have Letitia with them, which is a great spot for her to be him in, because I think with the exception of Cipe last week, nobody's gunning for her. I've said many, many times on this podcast in the past, who's going to waste a vote on Letitia? But I think that she's in such an interesting position because she might have, like, some of the most amounts of information of what people are up to. And I think if she has the ability or the opportunity to weaponize that, she can do that very, very easily, which is very intriguing for someone in her position who's essentially disregarded at this point.
Yeah, look, she's someone I find so hard to analyze, kind of like Dorel. Because, look, if the Ta'alo Laomé thing ever does come together, the Ghost of Dante plan, which is now what it is, they need Letitia. But, like, is it in Letitia's best interest to do that? Should she stick with Rob? Who are her primary allies? I know nothing about this, and yet she's so crucial.
Yeah, I guess that, look, can we try to figure this out? Who do we think Letitia would want to go to the end with, considering that literally all we know about her was that she, you know, reminded Rocco of his mother.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, Dural, because that seems like a good spot. I mean, I think anyone should want to sit next to Dural, Steffi, and Nicole are kind of the three, just based on like a juror perspective. It's just very tough. And it's also tough because I think that even if she makes a move, which could happen, she won't get credited for it, I don't think. Like, she's not the type of player who gets credited for these things. So, yeah, I don't know if she can win, which is like, then how do you judge what she should be doing or what moves are in her best interest when she's there for the long haul, but she's probably not a winner.
Right. She's there for the long haul, but it's when it comes to the bigger group perspective, you know, yeah. We don't see many people approaching Letitia of like, great, it's you and me until the end. It's more so like, here we have these three people and Letitia, which is going to do great for her in the short term. I think we're looking at her making at least the final five, but we could face a situation where if we have several tight relationships, I do wonder, would they keep Letitia over that other person, you know? And that's the thing that really might get her at the end. It's the fact that maybe we don't know her tight relationships because she doesn't have any at this point, yet she's still getting by because there are much bigger targets.
I could see Rob and Saula taking her out because, you know, Rob has so many good people to sit next to. He doesn't really need Letitia. So if she doesn't fit into the plan, that's always how I felt like she would go if and when she goes in this merge. It's just like, any plan that happens against Saula and against Rob requires her vote. Like, if Mike's going to do something at the 9 now, he needs her. If he's going to do something, you know, take out Jacques and Corbis and at 7 have fall our Maeve, like, he needs her again. Like, it's a really important vote. It's just, like, unreadable and also never talked about and just contextless for us, which is just frying my brain, and I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, it's more so just a series of symbols that we're trying to analyze. She's, you know, we are able to read the letters behind Rob's game. Letitia's game is octopus, seahorse, turtle, and we're not sure what to make of that.
Yeah, why weren't the symbols biostress symbols, by the way? Like, they already have those cards. I know that for a fact. So that's definitely what it should have been.
Because there was no idol there, so I think that would have tipped somebody off. That would have tipped Dante off, right? Because he was the one that helped Meryl's plan to find the idol behind all the biostress stuff.
Yeah, I mean, anytime they can work biostress into a challenge is what I think they should be doing. And now, a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
And we are back. But before we get to biostress and hashtag trystress, thank you so much to Glenn de la Creme, by the way, who said that should be the hashtag on Twitter. And it's literally perfect. Thank you for this gift. But we should do the chizzy. So let's get to the chizzy and take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right, I will start, and I'm going to give 3 points to Rob, who climbs the chizzy charts, as I think is deserved. Steadied the ship this week. His name wasn't even out there. The name of any of his core allies wasn't even out there. His enemies were targeting the people he wants out. Like, he's just, the work is basically being done for him a lot of the time. The people who he's not connected to are coming for each other, and his core people are just so well insulated. He rallied all the unanimous numbers against Dante and Jacques, and just, it's what we said he should have done last week. And even though I think Jacques would have been a better target, I can't fault, you know, how he performed in this episode. I'm going to give 2 points to Jacques, even though I worry for where he sits in the overall game. But you know what? We've seen a lot of progress compared to the the Ting Ting vote that will never die. The fact that he really sat here and didn't play his idol. I have said many, many times, for me, when someone has the correct read and is ballsy enough not to play their idol, especially in stressful situations like this was, you know, not getting lucky, having the correct read that they weren't coming for him, reading people in the situation and having it be right, not playing his idol, keeping it to protect him, I think was great. And while in the grand scheme of things, you know, I'm worried for him, the last 10, 20 minutes of the episode were all revolving around whether they could get Jacques to play his idol, and he won that small battle. Not sure if he'll win the war, but I have to give him 2 points for that. And look, it was a hard week. There weren't, I don't think, a lot of options for the Chizzy, so this might raise a few eyebrows, but I'm going to give a memorial point to Dante.
My eyebrows are going through the ceiling at this point.
Yeah. Okay, look, low bar. The math was improving. The ideas were still good. I liked his choices of the people to go on the reward. Letitia, Marba, Mike, people he could have worked with, people who, you know, maybe they were lying, but seemed open to kind of working with him. Marba, certainly, that was a bridge that he really reformed. Congratulations on that. And the Ghost of Dante plan, the Ta'ala Laomei plan, it really would have been good for so many people. Maybe it'll still happen. And then I will give him Chizzy points. I won't, because that's illegal. But he will be the person, the architect of that, even if it happens after he goes. So, yeah, I didn't expect it either, but here we are.
Wow. And you gave him 1 point for the number of people that he wanted to go on that reward with.
And the number of people he voted with the last 3 weeks in a row. Himself.
Exactly. Dante is number one in so many regards. Okay, so I am going to give, I'll build up from the bottom here. I'm going to give 1 point to Jacques. Totally co-sign everything that you said, even though he's not in a great position. I think he had a great read on everything that was happening. You know, I sort of called what he would do last week. He didn't put the idol around his neck, but he did have the wherewithal to realize what they were trying to do. And as a result, you know, plan another round of safety by knowing that he wasn't the exact targets. And I will also say, I think Jacques is killing the tribal council game. I think as a big fan of the show, he knows how much of the game is played at tribal council in the moment. And the fact that he's been able to seize it with not only his analogies and similes, but also the fact that he's able to really make his arguments very cogent. I mean, I think that's another reason why he's playing so well to the jury, is because we talk about this with previous guest Rick Devins during Edge of Extinction. He's really making a show for them. And I feel like that is a quality that's not talked about a lot when it comes to jury management on Survivor. Is his situation looking hairy in the next few weeks? Absolutely. But I think he's a capable enough player to have enough flexibility to wiggle his way through. And he's definitely safe as of next round, because I feel like he's going to be playing his idol no matter what, since it's public information. I'm going to give 2 points to Mike. Mm. Even though his plan didn't work out, I was very impressed with the skills that he showed in this episode. I think that the past few rounds, he has been given this tag of just, you know, a Rob follower, someone who was just blinded by those beautiful blue eyes to the point where he was spurning his previous eyes. Yeah, exactly. But I think the fact that he was willing to play ball here, and the fact that he was so relishing the idea of voting blocks, really makes me happy and hopeful that I think he knows how to move and shake in this game. He just hasn't felt like he needed to be in the position to do it yet. And that makes me hopeful that he will be able to find it at some point down the line. So I think he showed a lot of capabilities here that, even though it didn't play out exactly, I think that, you know, he earns 2 points in my book. 3 points. Everyone say it with me. Rob.
Throughout. No.
if only I would pull what Josh did this week in the Australian Survivor podcast this week. If I want to get this man more Chizzy points, he this was another plan that got pulled off masterfully. I think he makes some great points where, even though Dante was a focus target, he's just so damn well insulated that he's proved time and time again he can get rid of some of the biggest threats, some of his right hand people, but still be able to make it through another round with barely a scrape on him. The man is pure Teflon at this point, and it's going to take a lot to take him down. So he gets my 3 points for now, and I feel like he is now rising past all the eliminated people to really, you know, be out on in a lane on his own in the Chizzy charts.
Yeah, I feel like people get so frustrated with the status quo being kept, even though, I mean, look, CP went home last week, guys. Like, it's really fine. That was a huge vote. Like, it's fine to have, like, a down-the-middle vote from entertainment perspective, but let's just take a second. I mean, I'm a Rob fan, so this was coming from a personal point, but also just, like, I understand people wanting that big play to be taken down. Everyone roots for the underdog. That's what the people generally want to see. But, like, let's take a second to just – he's great at Survivor. Like, we really have – like, yeah. Whatever happens from now on, even if he gets taken down and, like, the hugest vote and gets humiliated, what I've seen so far, he's an incredibly good Survivor player.
Yeah, he has the connections of Kim Spradlin, the calmness of Yul Kwon, and just
like
the general
– what?
Yeah, and the general affability of Earl Cole, like, mixed all together. And those are three very good winners. So, again, there's a lot of game moving forward, and he still has to clinch it at the end. He needs to frame his arguments correctly, as I mentioned before. But I think in terms of position-wise and the game he's been playing, you know, up from the very beginning when he's able to convince everyone in the moment at that second tribal council to take out Paul instead of Nathan, I've been very impressed with Rob. There are a few things that he's done that have not been the best, but I'd say overall the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, you know, obviously Doof of the Week. Look, I gave a point to Dante, and he's not my Doof of the Week, but I do feel like, you know, Dante got Doof of the Week a lot. It's basically like the Dante Memorial Doof of the Week, even though it was named for Dural. And also I want to say that, like, Dante became such a good character in a very surprising way. Like, he was
yes.
so emotional. And it's something like watching Dante, I had the thought this week, like, I'm just so glad that we don't get 20 game bots. You know, as much as I love watching the game bots and I always root for the fans, I'm so glad you get a Dante in there who hates people, as we've said, and wants to go on awards alone and is emotional and kind of was getting part of the strategy game, but also really wasn't at times. And he was just so entertaining, the way he was like crying on the reward and stuff. Like, this man was real and raw, and I'm just grateful to have that on my TV.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's such a stark difference than what at least I initially thought. I think when you and Liana talked about this, like, long-haired man bun coffee shop owner, I think we were all sort of predicted him to be, for lack of a better term, sort of just like an airhead.
Yeah,
a guy
Fabio
who's willing to
was,
go
I
along.
Think what we,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy who's willing to go along with whatever. And we saw that, you know, maybe the first couple of episodes. But I think once he started getting angry about the lack of Flint due to, you know, Quibus's choices, I think we started to realize the capabilities that Dante had. He really shows, you know, the emotional qualities of Survivor, both the emotions he was expressing and the emotions expressed towards him. And like you said, I mean, these are humans playing out there, not robots. So as much as it might piss people off watching or piss people off in the game, it was so much fun to watch Dante. I'll perfectly, you know, mirror what Annalise said last week that, like, you know, he definitely makes some mistakes, but he is so much fun to watch. So it'll be interesting to see him on the jury. I know he'll be I'm sure he'll want to speak up at every tribal council, though unfortunately he's forbidden to do so. And also see, maybe at Ponderosa, he'll put himself out in his own little chair in his own little bed and not speak to anybody, because now he finally has time away from these people.
Yeah, he definitely is not going to want to hang, even though it's a really interesting group now at Ponderosa. And there are Ponderosa videos now on the Mnet website, which was a perfect time to drop them because CPE is now on the jury. So now that's the main thing I want to watch over the episodes. And, you know, you talk about her jury fashion sense. She had some awesome outfits anyway at Ponderosa. I mean, she is just bringing it in the fashion department. But anyway, I digress. Doof of the Week. I didn't have a huge strategic Doof of the Week, so I had to give it from a character standpoint to the person it was literally created for, and just say Dural. Just for being Pete Dural, like, how can you not give it to him in a place where Jack had a confessional just saying how definitely he had an advantage, like, what a man. What a character. He is Doof of the Week.
Yeah, when you receive, you know, a huge advantage in the immunity challenge, nearly miss the opportunity to actually memorize it, and then put on a performance that has literally everybody laughing at you winning, and also saying it was tribal immunity at least several times over the course of the episode, it can't not be Dural. And that makes me so happy, because I feel like, and hopefully I'm not jinxing this, it feels like Dural is in a good enough position that we should get at least a handful of more episodes about him. Shannon, we need Dural to make the family visit, because I need to find out just like who, I mean, it might just be like one of Dural's friends, but I just want to see like who in their life interacts with Dural, and what do they behave like? Are they as very similar to Dural, or is he like a complete like savant? We get this bring super intellectual guy coming out to talk about all of Dural's academic accolades.
Yeah, I think we had a similar thing with Tom last season where it was like, who married this man? We need to see. So I want to see who in Darrow's life can explain to us how Darrow came to be. That's exactly what I want. And okay. Well, I actually have more Darrow talk I want to do, but it's part of the Biostrath Variety Hour. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrath Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gates.
And also Mike Bloom.
All right. So this week on Twitter, the sponsors, mainly Biostrath, kept tweeting about the focus necessary for the challenge, which I found really funny because, like, Darrow, you know, had the answers to the challenge and that's why he won. Like, they had a lot of tweets. They said, well done, Darrow. It's no surprise he had all the focus he needed. It's like, is that what he had or did he have the answers? Focus and concentration are the core element of this challenge. Do the castaways have what it takes? And finally, a challenge that requires memory, concentration, and being able to recall. But, like, again, he had the answers. So then I had this amazing marketing idea. And I was like, what they should have done is he should have gone and they could have been like, give up your vote for an advantage. And the advantage should have been Biostrath. And then, you know, off camera, he should have definitely got the answers because I don't know if Biostrath would have helped. Imagine how many people would have been buying Biostrath if they thought that was the advantage that made Darrow win the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the secret. It's Michael's, you know, special drink that made Darrow become just an absolute memorization champion to rival Anastasia from Australian Survivor. Or maybe it could have been something where they like wrote the answers on the Biostrath label and he had to drink it all down to actually read it. But yeah, that's a really interesting tie-in. I'm very surprised that they did not jump on that opportunity. Just
they
imagine
Darrow
opened the box.
Biostrath and the cheat code. Like, it really would have worked in well.
Yeah. I also feel like the, you know, advantage over a no vote. I know that we had the reward temptation at the immunity challenge a couple weeks ago of like, hey, you could eat or you could and you'd have to set out the challenge. I kind of wish there was be something where like if you participate in the challenge, you risk giving up your vote. You know, like if you win immunity, you lose your vote. It'd be very interesting to see. I know I just keep throwing in all these wrinkles of like, hey, make a choice. Let's see what choice you make. But I feel like that's when the talk about strategy and decision making really comes into focus, for lack of a better term. And so it would be interesting to see, like, okay, would you risk it knowing that you could lose your vote if you win immunity? Do you throw the challenge so that you're able to vote at tribal council? Do you win it because even though you can't vote, you're safe? So it doesn't really matter. I think that could be a choice that I would be interested in seeing at some point down the line in some Survivor iteration.
Yeah, I have to say they've done well keeping iOS going the entire game. I mean, like, the outpost was good in New Zealand, but it was only in the pre-merge. I feel like, you know, there's never been a no game for you. Sometimes, you know, people are just saved from Tribal Council, but that has impact. It hasn't been too overpowered except for when there were four idols in the game. So something like this that has an impact but is, you know, an episodic thing, I think that's really good. I think they've had a lot of very diverse ideas, different types of, you know, importance and significance in the game while still keeping it, you know, interesting and relevant within the context of the season.
Yeah, completely agree.
All right, are we ready to Triostrath?
Okay. So let's outline let's outline what's going on here. Okay, so if you did not pay attention to the podcast last week, or you may have forgotten, you know, it might have been a busy week. Totally understand.
I have been tweeting about it. I mean, incessantly, but yeah, whatever.
It's been long theorized as to what exactly Biostrath is. And Shannon was able to get her fantastic mother to pull some strings while in South Africa to get an actual bottle of the good stuff back to taste it. I have acquired what is known as Strath, which I guess is a westernized version of Biostrath. And what we are going to do is we're going to perform a taste test live on the podcast. I know this is the first time I've done this ever on air. It's for you as well. So we'll see how the heck this is going to go.
Thank you for indulging me in these ideas. That's the first thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say is, look, the box of Biostrath, what a gift. Thank you, Mom. But it says on it, it explains what Biostrath is. So, like, I'm already so enthused that I'm going to find out. You know, okay, here's what it says. Biostrath, for a lifetime of well-being. By the way, this is fully proper South African, Afrikaans on the box and everything. I mean, and also English. I'm not reading the Afrikaans. It says, Biostrath is a natural nutritional supplement that supports memory and concentration. See, memory, that was Dural's thing. Counteracts fatigue and stress, supports the immune system, restores vitality, provides stamina in intensive work, sport, and study, is a source of antioxidants, helps the body metabolize carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, supports normal growth, supports recovery in athletes, which I am not, but can't hurt. It also says Biostrath herbal yeast has no relation to the parasitic strain of yeast known as Candida albicans, which is linked to a number of health problems. I wasn't asking, but I'm glad it's not.
Yeah, I have a different thing written on the box for Strath.
Oh my god, so we don't know what it is still. This is a cruelty. This is not funny.
All right. Well, I have like an essay written on mine as opposed to like your actual scientific explanation. I don't know. They got like an English major to write this one. Let's face it. Most of us do not get as many vitamins and nutrients as we should each day.
Preach.
And the ones we do ingest through food or supplements have to survive a harsh digestive process. These vitamins and nutrients can only provide us with top-notch nutritional value if our bodies give them the right environment to do so. And most of ours don't. That's where Strath comes in. We use a nutritional yeast called Saccharomyces cerevisiae, or the beneficial yeast. Then we feed each nutritional yeast cell a feast of beneficial herbs, each containing vital nutrients the body needs. These yeast cells eat and digest each vital nutrient. Human digestive systems cannot break down the cell wall of the nutritional yeast, so we at Biostrath have one more step to complete. We stop the growth of a nutritional yeast cell, which allows the cell wall to open up. This process is called plasmolysis, and it allows your body to easily absorb the vital nutrients that have been digested by the yeast cells.
Do you think anyone thinks at this point that Biostrath isn't paying us? Like, we're now just reading out the box. We're reading out two different boxes. Like, it seems shady. It really seems shady.
So Biostrath is basically like genetically modified yeast cells, essentially.
I wish you hadn't told me that right before I'm about to drink it. I don't know if that's good or bad. I just don't like the sound of it.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. So I figured as for a taste test, I feel like we need some criteria for this. So here's what we're going to do, Shannon. I think there are three pieces of criteria that I want us to judge it on. And I think we should give each on a scale of 1 to 5. And look, we are different people trying different products, but it's a good way to sort of compare across borders, as it were. So I think smell could be one.
Mm.
I think taste should definitely be one. And I think we should give some for vitality as well to see how invigorated we feel. Any other categories you feel like we should include there?
No, I mean, like, look, so 5 for how much it smells or how good it smells?
How good it smells.
Right.
We're evaluating it as a product, not necessarily how much it embodies those qualities, how much it tastes, you know.
Okay, well, I've been sick all week, and I've been trying, you know, Western medicine, which actually has been pretty helpful. But I'm interested to see if this could kind of cure me. And look, it's after midnight here. Do I want to be super energized and focused? Not really. But this is the kind of effort I put into the podcast. We brought it back from South Africa. We're trying it in Australia and America. Is this good podcasting? Look, it's something. It's never been done before. If there's another podcast that has live taste tested Biostrath on it before, like, I want to hear about it. This is unique. This is original. This is our Pulitzer moment, Mike.
All right. Well, let's start with smell, because I'm holding a capful a good like 2 feet below my nose, and I can smell it from here. So I'm sure we have opinions about it.
If you're ranking how much it smells, that sounds like a 5. But we're only ranking
smells like
good it smells.
Which is definitely on the other end of the scale. Oh. I'm really trying to figure out what this smells like. Oh, God. Oh. I mean, for lack of a better term, it smells like garbage.
Okay.
I thought there would be some sort of, I don't know, flavor to it. And maybe there will be when we try it. But at least the smell is just very medicine-y, if that makes sense.
Okay, well, I haven't opened it yet. So I'm doing that now. And I will smell it. Okay. I'm going to smell the whole bottle.
I should also mention that at least Strath is a very nondescript, like, the actual glass on it is very dark, so you can't see what color it is, and when it's poured out, it's a very murky, shady brown.
Right. So in terms of the look, to me, smells... Okay. Kind of like... Do you ever have Worcestershire sauce, or is that a South African thing?
Yeah. I could see that.
Oh, okay, so maybe they're exactly the same. That's great. Kind of like that, but like more medicine-y.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're both on the trail here of it being.
I give it a medicine-y. 2 for smell.
I give it a 2 as well. You mm-hmm. know, I think that it's not absolutely terrible. I'd rather not sit in a room bathing in it to take it in smell wise.
I wouldn't want to bathe in anything but water. So.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God! All right.
Says that you can have it either like by itself, which is what we're gonna do, or with fruit. Or milk, which I don't have prepared,
juice. I don't want to mix this with milk. I do not want to mix this with milk. My stomach is already stomach is already protesting right now. I'm not drinking milk and BioStrat together. That is not a combination that works out, much like Dante and literally anybody, any player.
I doubt your commitment to this podcast, but also I won't do that because I don't want to ruin milk for me. Like, I want to be able to drink milk in the future. I also says you should have 5 milliliters and I have no way to measure it, so I'm just going to pour some in the cap.
Yeah, I believe that from what we heard, just pouring a cap full is the ideal serving size. It also says that you're supposed to take it 3 times a day, and which again is maybe some false advertising when we saw someone like Darrow just glug it down entirely and spill it all over himself.
Okay. All right. So I think we'll taste it and then we'll give our numbers for the taste, and then I think we should only judge vitality like. After the question segments, we can get a few minutes into it to kind of feel if we're feeling, you know, I mean, I already feel better. Like, I feel invigorated just by doing this.
That smell woke you up.
Yeah. Also, maybe the placebo effect. Okay. Let's pour a capful.
Okay. Pouring a capful.
Just excellent podcasting. I poured a quart. I can't do more than this. Like, it's proper brown.
Yeah. I filled up a full capful and I'm fully regretting it at this point.
Okay. Well, let bottoms up. 3.
Bottoms up.
2.
Oh my God.
I don't know what I was expecting. Why was it so thick?
My eyes
were watering. Like, my eyes are actually watering. It's like in the back of my throat.
Oh my God. Okay. So. That was terrible.
Are we going to get fired from RHAP?
No, absolutely not. Okay, so Shannon, describe your tasting experience for the audience at home.
I tasted the texture before I tasted the taste. And the taste also wasn't good. But it hit me after because it was... I think the benefits are obviously worth it. I mean, I read out the list. I'm not shaking. Like, that... People do that 3 times a day. That's a lot. I mean, that would ruin milk.
Yeah, that's... I'm very glad I did not incorporate literally any other things into it, because that would just ruin permanently for me the actual elements themselves when I indulge in them alone.
All over my hands for some reason.
It tastes like it smells, which I was hoping it wouldn't. I thought, okay, this smells a little funky, but maybe the taste is going to be something, you know, maybe not delicious, but at least tolerable. And I cannot say that it was. I agree, the texture is weird. I mean, again, it has that texture of cough syrup, so it's a little thicker. So it does sort of hit your tongue first, and then you taste it afterwards, and... Oh boy, yeah, I can understand why you would need to take it with something else, because if you're just swigging that thing back, all the power to you, man. That is, it's nasty.
Should we try
it's again? Bio-nasty. No, absolutely not. I'm not. You can try it. I'm not. Okay. I've learned my lesson. So I put my hand on the stove.
Yeah, so as I said, it's all over my hands and I have no way to wipe it off. And it's got like, now I'm like analyzing it, and it's got like little things in it.
Yours has things in it?
It's like tiny, tiny little... Anyway, I don't know. Maybe it was the flight? I'm using my notes now to wipe this off my hand. You know, I put a lot of effort into my notes.
Microbes in her biostrath. Microbe strath.
What are we doing? Like, what is... Anyway, I hope people enjoyed that. And look, I didn't think that, like... an audio taste test might work because I'm just literally wiping it off my hands. I didn't think it would work because, you know, you can't hear people taste things, but then we were like coughing and it was like completely legitimate. Like, it was really in my throat and I still love, like, I'm still a bio stan. Are there different flavors? Are there different textures? Because I'm, you know, next time my mom goes to South Africa, I'm willing to try something else, but I will never, ever have that again.
Yeah, I would say that, oh, good. I'm reading on the side. It is kosher, which is good.
Even better.
So I feel like we're both doing well for our original, you know, belief system.
My belief system lactose, is biostress, but yeah.
Lactose free. It says nothing artificial. It might have helped if something artificial was in there, yeah, to be quite honest.
Sometimes that's why you put the artificial stuff in.
Yeah, so
could
you know what?
Sugar.
I think it was. I think it very much could have. I enjoy that we got to do this. I did not enjoy the experience, but I enjoy the fact that we informed the world a bit about what Biostrath tastes like. Do I recommend anybody get it?
Yes, they're paying us money.
Yes, yes, but with a nice glass of milk or a nice shot glass of sugar on the side. Maybe line your glass with sugar, like salt on a margarita. And then drink the Biostrath that way. Though I would say, do not take this straight. As Quip has said, everything in life doesn't need to be straight, including your intake of Biostrath.
Yeah, okay. So, look. Two, I think we agreed for smell. And I was being kind, but two for smell, one for taste. Do you think, this is so mean to Biostrath. I hope they keep retweeting me. But look, I hope they don't unfollow me. My God. But what number vitality would we need for this to be worth it?
I would say a four, three or four. I'd have to be at least above average.
I don't need a full vitality for that. Like, I can be full vitality with, like, tea.
Okay, so I'm going to give it, I'll give it a six. You know what, I'll give it a seven.
Okay, well, anyway, I mean, I don't know if I feel better. I can probably feel worse. But look, I'll see within the coming days if I get better with my sickness. And that could be Biostrath this one time. It could be the other medication I'm taking. It could just be time and the fact that I'm definitely just generally on the mend, but I definitely will credit Biostrath.
Yeah, we also just put a whole bunch of yeast into our system, so I'm very intrigued to see how that's going to react with the rest of my body.
Yeah, I didn't know what yeast does, and I don't want to know, and this is what we've done. Never say we're not dedicated. Like, this is, I honestly feel like I go to the Australian Survivor podcast and I'm trying to be like a normal human being, you know? And on the South Africa podcast is where I do this, and
Survivor's Survivor South Africa, I think, is in a very fun way, probably the most ridiculous out of all the Survivor franchises, at least English speaking, that currently exist. So I think it's very apropos that we're doing stupid things like this. I was very happy that you came up with this idea. Am I going to touch Strath after this naked? I'm not entirely sure. Just to be clarified, that would mean this Strath is naked, not me naked. Considering that you got it all over your hands, I would not want to get this murky substance over any part of my body.
What? Why are you making people picture that? Like, that's just an odd way to go with that. I actually feel better. In fact, I'm a 5 on vitality. Biostrath is the best. It is worth it. It is a lot, and it is worth it. That's the verdict.
This should be the subtitle of this podcast. It's a lot, but it's worth it.
Great. I love Biostrath, especially now that the taste is dissipating from my throat. I feel really, really good.
This feels like after you go through like a really, you know, heavy labor process when giving birth to a child, and then yes, you just instantly forget about it, and you're like, you know what, I could have another one. I feel like that's the experience you have with Biostrath right
you
now.
You heard it here first. Drinking a couple of grams of Biostrath was the same as giving birth. Only a man could say that, Mike. Ask your wife. Ask her to take it and ask which one is worse.
Yeah, I would say I think one is definitely much worse than the other. The only one you can do naked.
Why have you conflated those things? I don't understand, but I feel so pumped up. I'm not going to sleep tonight. I love that this happened. I hope people are still listening. Oh my God. Okay, let's get to the questions. That was
all right, yeah,
everything I wanted it to be, by the way.
We're jazzed up. We're going to answer like 20 questions right now. We are full of Biostrath.
Okay. I don't even remember what happened in the episode. Like, I'm like, you know, everything is like before Biostrath and after Biostrath. Vanessa Yang Turnia asks us, how does Jacques and Corbis bring the Loose Change players together? Can they please be the new power duo? And there are ways for this to happen. And I think it has to do with A, Letitia being important. And obviously Mab is someone they could work with. And then, you know, people will be splitting the votes because of Jacques' idol, perhaps. So if they can kind of get some of the players away, that obviously there's 9 people left. So if they get 4 people together, where the other majority can't split a vote because they only have five, perhaps then that's how they could do it. Either just full-on idle someone out, which couldn't be obviously Rob and Nicole, who have their own idols, that they would play it if Jacques played his idol correctly, or get the numbers together on a split vote.
Yeah, that's a good four, because I think then you're getting to eight, where who knows if the other four would risk a tie if the other four are staying strong to, you know, it's much like Survivor Samoa, where like a foursome is able to claw their way from inside. I also think that, you know, I think Jacques and Mike do get on. I know Mike was trying to convince Jacques to play his idol much more subtly than Steffi before Tribal Council, but I still think that they do want to work together. So especially if Mike is starting to see that he has some options to make moves as well, I could see him moving over too. So I think that there are still options, but I feel like that hole is slowly growing, you know, fainter and smaller. And so I think that if they do make it happen, it needs to happen in the next few votes, especially since assuming the two of them are going to be targets for the immediate next couple of tribal councils.
Yes. Jason Gates, who is my brother slash intern, asks, has it been the correct decision from the editors to make most post-merge boots very obvious to the viewer? For example, this week the boot was very obvious and the only suspense was whether Jacques would play his idol.
So I guess I'll answer that question with another question, which is, what could they have done? I guess they could have had, you know, people say, well, we could get rid of Jacques and blindside him with his idol. But at the same time, like, you know, they can't put words in people's mouths necessarily. Like, you can Frankenbite what you want. But I feel like if you have people be like, yeah, the person I feel like we need to get rid of immediately is Rob. Like, it's really tough to make that happen if it's not conducive to what's actually happening on the island.
Yeah, I mean, the whole season has a really different feel. I did think that this was a bit suspenseful. I was like, who knows, maybe they'll go for Jacques. I mean, that's what made strategic sense for me. But yeah, the whole season just has a very different feel. It kind of either works for you or if it doesn't. Plus, there probably should be a little bit more of a balance. But we do get to see, you know, everything that's happening. We do get a really good sense of the players, except Leticia. And I can still feel it in my throat. I'm so sorry.
I think it's those little specks.
And I put my hand on my face and I could smell it. And it's difficult to podcast, but I feel focused and energized, even though I've now been distracted. What was that?
I just realized that you were a Drow in this situation, that you spilled the Biostrath everywhere all over yourself.
I know. Yeah, I shouldn't make fun of Drow when I'm peak Drowing.
But just on that point, I can definitely start to see now how it might be getting a bit trite to see this over and over and over again, where unlike, you know, the westernized Survivor, there's not a lot of like, is it A or is it B? They more so want us to know the entire story behind it, which is great for us, but it is missing that sort of key cog where, you know, maybe Australian Survivor, which is currently airing, for example, does a better job of building suspense and big TV moments from that suspense. Survivor South Africa is not necessarily going for that this season. And as a result, it feels like a bit of a different season. Last season felt very different for very different reasons. This season feels a bit different just with the storytelling that they're doing. But as someone who's watched, you know, nearly 50 seasons of Survivor, I'm more than happy to see changes in storytelling happen. And for what it's worth, I've been enjoying it, though I can understand Jason's point here.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the episode. I know Jason also did because I talked to him about it. But basically, you know, there were things in this episode that are always really fun. And I think that also is something we've come away from the season thinking is like episodes can still be really good despite the vote. I think we've said that before, kind of beyond the vote. I mean, the cultural reward is something we don't get a lot of in Modern Survivor. I really love that. I loved the first few minutes where people were talking about the CP boot and like the betrayal and all of that. And we don't often get to ruminate on these huge betrayals. And that's something the season has really allowed us to do. So I enjoy it. I'd be happy to be blindsided or in more suspense for a couple of votes as well. But yeah, very different vibe to the season. And I'm definitely excited to see what they do with the editing in the next six episodes.
Absolutely. Especially if, you know, things become more fluid. It's been a while since we've seen things really change at Tribal Council. I would not be surprised, especially with Jacques, you know, being someone to really be a commanding voice there, if things do happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Vince Malazzo asks, should Drow have concocted some Slumdog Millionaire-esque story detailing his long history with swordfish, turtles, palm trees and rusty keys to explain his sudden mental acuity after winning immunity?
Interesting. So he would have come up with like he would have had flashbacks to like those images and that would have helped him memorize. I guess on that note, Shannon, Do you have a personal strategy for these memorization challenges, considering how much they come up? If you were to play this challenge, or if you played at home, what you would do?
I just had Stephen Fishback on the podcast, and he was talking about kind of like memory strategy. For me at home, I try to say them out loud, which is not something you can really be doing in the thing. You know, that's how I'm doing it, and that's a good way to do it. So I don't know how you would do it on the island. It's really hard on the island. Definitely having a cheat code, having the focus that I currently have. I mean, I think that should have been Darrell's story, obviously, because it would have made sense. But it's a tough one with these challenges.
Yeah, I personally, maybe just it's my weird brain, probably would have gone like the story method,
yeah,
which I think is like what Sophie has put out there of like, one day the swordfish and the turtle walked in to see the stuff key, you know, like, tell a stupid story. But the tough thing with that is when they keep repeating symbols, like, it's really tough to make a creative story out of that. The other thing you could do is what Steven did, which is
numbers.
Assign numbers to them. And then, you know, I mean, the tough thing about that is the human brain, it can only really contain like 10 numbers at a time. That's why they make phone numbers that long. So I think once you get up to like the 12 and the 15 streak, I think that's why people started to struggle a lot near the end there, was because it's just tough to retain that number, that, you know, that string of numbers. But I would love this idea of Darrow's like, yeah, I mean, I was catching a lot of swordfish with my uncle. So that's how I remember that swordfish had to come up second, because he's my second favorite family member.
Yeah, I would love to see Dante try the number strategy. That would have been a good one. I'm done with insulting the math of other people, because Dante is now off the show. But really, yeah, the number thing, I don't know if it would work for me. I think, you know, singing it in your head could be always good if you can kind of put it to a song. I know some, you know, Nicole maybe could have annoyed people by saying things out loud, you know.
She was sort of recited like, oh, yes, slice swordfish with turtle beak on the side.
Exactly. Joshua Felix asks, Ding Mary Kill, Darrell's cheat code, Sean from Australian Survivor's 50% weighted bag, so they have to hold up, you know, 10% of their weight, but she only has to hold up 5%, no one knew about it, or Aubrey's Edge of Extinction practice area. And I just want to say, overall, I really like when the reward, like when the advantages and challenges are hidden. Like, it should always be that, rather than like Abby Maria getting to, you know, go to whatever phase. Like, this is way more fun because it, you know, might have deception unless you're Darrell.
Yeah, and also that's also really interesting, because that challenge that Abby ended up winning was one of those like elimination station challenges, which I feel like we haven't seen in a long time, and it came out here in the reward challenges. I think Jeff Pittman had a great tweet this week where, you know, it's great to see these for reward challenges, not necessarily immunity, because it really sort of, you know, cuts the storyline off of the knees if like Dante was eliminated in the first round of the challenge. Like, oh, okay, I guess there's no suspense as if he'll win immunity and survive the vote or not. So I like the reward challenge, especially, but I would have to kill the EOE challenge advantage, considering that we only saw it once and it had no bearing on the story whatsoever, because I don't believe that Aubrey was even in it at all when it came down to that final challenge that Chris ultimately ended up winning. I will ding Sharn's weight advantage, because having a little less weight to throw around is always good in the bedroom. And I will.
What is this podcast? What does that bias strength do to you?
I don't know. Maybe I got spiked with something. I will marry Darrow's cheat code, because that's something I want to like come home to every night, because that provided so much great comedic potential. You know, I feel like if we put Sharn's poop idol in there instead of the bag, maybe that would have had a better chance. But this is something I want to be in a committed relationship with.
If I was going to kill any challenge advantage, even though it wasn't listed here, like definitely Malcolm's and then Wendell's challenge advantage, where they get two goes of holding the ball on the rod, which is A, not helpful, B, puts the pressure on, and like never really seems to work. You'd have to be pretty much the best anyway, or at least close to the best, which that's a really bad advantage. The 50% weighted one is really good, because I mean, half the weight is everyone else. It's not something that people could really know, or you could tell them. So that's definitely the best one. The cheat code seemed hard, but if Darrell can pull it off, I feel like I could. So that one's also pretty good. And yeah, the practice area one, it's like not fun to watch people practicing. I don't know how helpful it is. And she didn't win the challenge. So I don't think that's probably the worst. But
yeah, so would you prefer advantages that give you like a shoe-in to win? Like another one we haven't spoken about is the one that both Jason and Cochran use in their seasons of the endurance challenge, where you hold on to the plank with the rope, and they were basically given like an advantage to start two knots, you know, later or something, which basically gave them a win to the challenge. Would you prefer an advantage to hand them a win or to, you know, make them have to struggle for it a bit more?
I think that there needs to be a balance. I think this was actually pretty good, although they did say, like, if you can learn it, you'll win. So, but no, you know what? That's still effort on his part. I think that you don't want it to feel like the whole challenge was pointless, but you also don't really want to feel like the advantage is pointless. That's why it's such a hard balance to strike.
Yeah, I agree with that. Or, like, I think the very first one we saw probably was when Danny Boatwright won, like, the, hey, you could switch positions with any person in the challenge, which basically won her final seven immunity when she needed it.
Because it was strategically used. Like, you have to know what you were doing to use it.
Right. It's not like, hey, you get to start at this advantageous position. It's something it's a decision you need to make. And you know how much I love decisions, Shannon.
All right. Well, that's all we have. And look, this was a historic podcast. Definitely something that we did, that we can always say we did. And the hashtag.
One for the books.
Yes. The hashtag is hashtag Triostrath. Never forget.
Yes. My gut certainly never will.
Yeah, definitely. So on the Australian Survivor podcast, I said I had a surprise mystery guest, which I can now announce, Mike. It is the great Mike Bloom. So
what? Him? You got him on?
I hope you won't be so drunk from your Biostrath for the Australian Survivor podcast where we try to be normal people. Please bring that version of yourself to the podcast. Yeah.
I think we're going to be punch drunk. We're going to be talking about like 4.5 hours of Survivor content this week. So I think
that's why you need Biostrath. That's why we're taking it.
Oh, I'm not. I'm putting this away in a corner and I'm saying, hey, remember when, you know, I'm someone who has a food philosophy of I'll try everything once. So that sort of ticks the box here. And I'm ready to put this in a corner and say, I tried Biostrath and I'm ready to move on with that experience. But I am very excited to join you for another International Survivor edition. I thought this season has been awesome so far. I'm hoping I'm not jinxing it with my appearance. And you just had a great couple podcasts with Steven and Josh. And it's just been, it's been a pretty bananas season so far. And I'm hoping that there's more banana eating and more banana strategy going on in the next three episodes that I get to break down with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really fun. Another three episodes this week. So much Survivor going on. As you said, Mike, podcast with Josh Wiggler last week, which was great. Also, exit interview. So I really hope you guys are checking that out. Plus, follow me on @ShannonGate so you never miss it. And Mike, besides coming in the Australian Survivor podcast, what else do you have going on?
So you can always follow me at @AMikeBloomType. I'm doing Big Brother Exit Press. Just interviewed the final pre-juror of Big Brother 21 up on Parade.com. He was a lot of fun to speak to. Josh Wiggler and I are doing some Stranger Things adjacent content, as we put it. This past week, we talked about Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein, which features the actor David Harbour, who is a main character in Stranger Things, doing, quite honestly, one of the weirdest pieces of pop culture I've seen in quite some time. It's the Netflix version of a Triostrath, essentially. So be sure to check that out if you want to hear Josh and I just spend half an hour trying to explain what exactly happened. Next time, in a few days, we'll be talking about the movie The Neverending Story, which has links to Stranger Things. We're just sort of bridging together some Stranger Things content before we get into our next island of coverage, as it were. And I know Josh plugged this a bit as well, but the weeks are counting down before Survivor 39 comes back. And just as we think we're fully stuffed to the brim with Survivor content, we have a nice swallow full of yeast cells that is Survivor 39. Why? I've been working on some preseason coverage for that, and it has been a lot of fun. I am very, very excited to show you guys what I was able to experience out there in Fiji in the coming weeks.
Okay, the hashtag is swallow full of yeast cells. We have changed it. No, Triostrath.
Yes, that hit Mary Poppins song.
God. I'm going to go wash my hands and brush my teeth.
DJ LaBelle Klein, can you please write, just a spoonful of sugar helps the Biostrath go down, please and thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should still go out and buy it to experience what we did. I really don't want to lose our potential sponsorship. I mean, they're definitely not listening, but I mean, it was an experience and you guys should all experience it. So anyway, subscribe to the Reality TV Wrap Ups feed and the International Survivor Wrap Ups feed. And look, please rate us 5 stars. I don't know how this wouldn't be 5 stars, but we really would appreciate your reviews and ratings. That's really good while there's 2 International Survivor seasons going on. And I feel like we've earned it. Like, we put our bodies on the line for this content.
Yeah, I would say that hopefully we get a 5 on smell, taste, and vitality at this rate.
We smell great. We taste great. Okay. We smell a lot and we taste a lot. I don't. Anyway, next week, I definitely feel different. I feel a little drunk. Something is happening. Something is happening. Next week, we have the great John Michelle. So that's amazing. Awesome guest. Still so jealous that Michael to do the deep dive with her. One of my favorite ever podcasts, one of my favorite players, and I can't wait.
I am so excited. Jean is such an entertaining person to speak to. I totally agree that she quite honestly might be one of my favorite Survivor players I've ever interviewed, just to get her perspective on everything. So I'm very excited to get her thoughts on this season, especially as we're nearing the end game. She is someone who took a shot against a very Rob-like figure near the end. So we'll see exactly what her thoughts are on the game, as well as maybe she has some Australian Survivor thoughts as well, considering that was the thing that she binged before going out to play her original season.
Yeah, she's going to be awesome to talk to, but that is next week. Until then, I will be ruminating on what we just did and just dealing with where my life has gotten me and I don't know where I'm at with everything. The fact that we did this. Thank you, Mom, for making it happen. And thank you, Mike, as always, for coming on and indulging me in these crazy ideas and for drinking Strath for me.
Of course.
Okay, and thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to all you guys for listening, literally, especially if you got through that. Thank you so much. And we will see you with John next week. Bye.